Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I want to introduce my guest, amazing lady, multi-instrumentalist, plays piano, keyboards, the guitar, and mostly known for bass. But she is a phenomenon on the internet, and she's 30 million YouTube hits. It's pretty amazing. Anyway, I want to play a clip for you to kind of show you a little bit what she's about, Anna Santina. But I'm going to play this. This is Stomp, which is a little bit different than what she's known for. She's known more for a more of a heavy metal and rock thing. But she's really, really versatile, and this is a funk thing that she did. So let's take a listen to this, and we'll talk to Anna.
Stop, step down in it, put your foot where you feel the fit. Stop, you don't want to quit, put your heels where you feel it.
Welcome, Anna, to the show. It's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's great being here.
Now, I'm just going to lay out some stats here, and then I want to ask you some questions. You started playing piano about 8. You started playing guitar about 12 years old. And your first tour at 14. That's pretty amazing. And then, of course, you've been playing bass for quite a while. Let me ask you, start out first with playing piano and guitar. How did you get into bass after starting on those instruments? And secondly, how did that piano and guitar influence your bass playing?
I started piano at a pretty young age, at 8, because my mom, she's not a musician, but she always wanted my brother and I to, you know, learn a bunch of things, and one of those was music. So, you know, we started taking classical lessons and became classically trained in piano, and then after a while, Ricky and I, my brother, we kind of wanted to expand our horizons a little bit, so we were interested in guitar, and at that point, we had already been classically trained in piano for years on end, and then we heard about School of Rock on the radio, and you know, our parents, we were 12, so our parents took us in, and my mom, we all, like, were blown away by how legitimate everything felt, even though the school that we went to was brand new. It was brand new. We were two of the first maybe, like, 10 people to sign up, and one of the, you know, really big ideas behind School of Rock is becoming a well-rounded musician. So that means picking up multiple instruments, picking up multiple genres, all everywhere. So you know, my mom, she signed us up, of course, and we started doing School of Rock, and we learned guitar. And then after a couple years, it was about time to expand our horizons a little bit more. So I picked up the bass, and I just fell in love with it when I was 14. I loved it. I play it more than anything now, but it changed my life.
Well, it's interesting because your love of hard rock and heavy metal, you would think, you know, guitar. I mean, it's like the Marshall Blast, you know, putting up the, just cranking it up. So it's interesting that you went to bass.
Yeah.
Now, how much did your, now with your piano playing and you were taught and trained, so that developed your reading skills, right? So you could read.
Definitely.
And, but did you find yourself from playing piano, because you kind of, as a keyboard player, you kind of, you're like a little self-arranger when you're playing and the way you lay out stuff on the piano. Did that influence you a lot for your bass playing?
It did, especially my left hand, because being a piano player, you have to be, it's like having two different brains. It's kind of like being a drummer, you mm-hmm. know? You have to be really, really good with both of your hands, basically. And, I mean, along with every other instrument, but piano, it really, when, you know, you read music, and you really learn how to separate each finger, each hand from everything when you're classically trained. That really helped my bass playing and my guitar playing, because mm-hmm. it's just more, it kind of creates more of a fluidity. I definitely owe a lot to starting out with piano, for sure.
Yeah. Well, also, too, the strength in your hands. Playing a grand piano takes a little bit of strength. You know, your fingers have to be pretty well developed.
Totally.
So your technique on your bass, you have the strength in your hands to really, because one of the things I've noticed, like that stomp piece that we just played, it's clean. You're articulating. All the notes are heard clearly. It's not sloppy. It's not, you know, we can, you know, trust me, as a, when I play bass sometimes and I try to do those fast things, it gets a little like muddy in there. But every note is clear, and that's your execution. And I think that's important, because your hands, that strength that you develop from your keyboards, it seems to, and also too, using keyboards, it's a rhythm instrument too.
That's,
so like you were saying, so, and that's a key thing now, I think, with contemporary basses, that sense of rhythm, especially in what you were doing in stomp, of course, obviously. Well, let's talk a little bit. Now, first of all, we have to get down to the gear. So in stomp, what did you use?
I used what I have in my hands right now, which is my Carvin V59K Vanquish bass. I got it a couple months ago, and I really love it. It's actually one of the I've owned a couple of five strings before, but this is the first five string I own that I feel completely comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because everything just seems really well put together. Everything kind of just flows into everything else. So. So, yeah, I mean, I used to strictly play only four string, but I really changed my mind one day when I was down at the Carvin Guitars factory and I saw this bass. I'm like, I need this bass in my life right now.
I know that feeling. And it's a beautiful bass. The inlay on this thing's great. She let me play it a little bit before the show. The neck is nice, and the neck is thin, but it's fast. And the action's really low, but it's not flapping around and making noise. You can actually, every note rings true. There's no dead spots on it. And now, are those pickups active? Do you have a battery preamp?
Yeah, actually they switch, but I leave my bass on passive.
So you're playing passive.
Yeah.
Play a little bit. Just give us a little bit of the you can either play the...
Another thing I really like about Carvin guitars is how versatile they are. So I like playing a bunch of different genres. I mean, mostly I'm a metalhead and I love rock music, but I also really love playing, you know, traditional music mm-hmm. and also a lot of slap. So I don't want to, if I'm playing a live show or recording, I don't want to have to switch out my bass a million times depending mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. the song that I'm playing. So I just really love this bass because even if I'm jamming, just, you know.
Well, let me ask you. Okay, so you just played a pop and snap type of thing. Now give me your that kind of growly rock type of sound. Give me a play a rock riff, but you know what I'm saying? Like you kind of did. I'm going to play a clip a little later from the Rush thing. But when you're punching that guitar, it gets kind of a growl to it. So she's getting that low end, but it's got that kind of a. Now do me a favor and just. Nail one of the strings, just like dig in like you would normally do with your fingers. So okay, now she's breaking up the amp a little bit, but it gets that growl.
Yeah, it really does.
Which is like a, I mean, that's more indicative of a rock thing. Now let me ask you a little bit. You play both pick and fingers, but mostly fingers, right?
Yeah, it really depends on what genre I'm playing. When I was in a band, in a metal band, I would like playing with a pick. But now, doing YouTube videos, I play with my fingers all the time.
Okay. Now, on Stomp, did you use an amp or did you want to go direct on that?
Yeah, I used my Cube 10GX amp from Roland, actually, to record that one. It was a pretty short little piece that I did, so I just recorded direct I mic'd up my amp and recorded on my amp. And
so you mic'd it.
I love that little amp. And now I'm playing out of the 60, Cube 60X. Mm-hmm. So this one is strictly for bass, but my 10GX, it's for everything, acoustic, guitar, electric guitar,
bass. Oh, so you can use it for anything.
Yeah.
And that's the 10GX, is that the 10 for wattage? Or what kind of speaker's in it? Is it a 10-inch?
Yeah.
And it gives you enough low end?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's okay. It's really, it serves its purpose, that's for sure.
Now, let me ask you, there's a video, I don't have the clip here because it really shows the cellos, but she did this thing, which I think is totally cool, because there's two cellos just playing blown out, and it's hard rock. They're doing a cover of a Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, and it's Emil and Dariel and Cooper drummer.
Yeah.
And I saw an amp in there. What was that amp that mm-hmm. you were using there? Were you using that amp or were you using it something else? Or
no,
just going direct?
Actually, I was going direct.
You were going direct?
Yeah, we were recording in Logic and I was going direct.
And I recommend, go to her YouTube channel and check that out. The reason I didn't play it, because you're in the pocket. You're not really standing out because you're not meant to be. And though you're doing some really cool stuff against what they're playing, but it's a great sound. And one of the things I think is really cool, it's pretty innovative. And I think that's great because you're kind of pushing it. You're pushing the boundaries and going into different styles. And you really do, from what I've seen of the videos, you do a lot. You cover a lot of different things. And I think that's really important because as a musician today, you got to be able to handle anything.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Now... So you use the Cube, the 10GX for the X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. So the most time when you do your YouTube videos, you actually mic the amp or you're still miking.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the time I do, percussive playing. So I just like how it sounds more when the amp is mic'd as opposed to recording direct, because a lot of time you can't feel what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm playing something, you know, like Louis Johnson, who he's the most percussive out of everyone that I play.
That's in your face.
Yeah.
I hope that it's coming across being mic'd here, but I mean, she's using a little amp, and it's not real loud in here, but I can feel it almost. I mean, if it was a bigger system, it would definitely thump my chest.
Definitely.
But it's there, and that bass, credit to the bass, it's really, really responsive. It's just, I mean, it's grabbing the dynamics, and those type of dynamics are, that's integral to that type of sound.
Yeah, I love this bass. It's great.
But... Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about technique. What did you do to, I mean, besides the obvious thing with scales and stuff, anything, I don't know how to describe this, but one of the things that I learned when I was playing guitar to get clarity, it was taught to me at school, is when you pluck the string or whatever, do you hammer your hand when you hit the string? So like, so if you're playing like this B note and you're going to pluck it, do you hammer?
Mm-hmm. Let me demonstrate.
Okay, so go play like a scale. I just want to see. This is hard to describe, and I'll get to it in a minute. Yeah, we were taught this in school too. When you pluck the string, you hit, or in guitar, you pick it. You almost like hammer this. She's hammering onto the string. When you do that fast, it articulates. It's part of the secret of getting that clean sound.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because that's one thing I've noticed in all of the stuff that I've heard that you play. It's really clean. You can hear the notes. It's not real muddy.
I think because we were both taught in school that is just one of the essentials that a lot of teachers teach, which is one of the things, like, when you're being self-taught, it's really good to watch videos, I think, because a lot of the time you just can't even tell. But when you're actually seeing it, like for me, I'm a very visual learner. So, you know, seeing somebody like, okay, so when I first started playing bass, Flea was like my biggest inspiration. I love Flea. He still is. So when I started learning how to slap, learning everything about bass, I really, you know, looked up to him and used his technique. So that's why when I slap, my thumb isn't completely parallel to the string. Like mm-hmm. a lot of traditional slap players, it's a little bit down. And that's because I learned from Flea. And, you know, besides that, I, you know, attacking the string, Flea really attacks the string. So I think, you know, just watching videos of bassists that you admire, that are your inspiration in any sense of the word, I think it's a great way to learn.
Well, a lot of when you took guitar, did you study classical guitar?
I did not study classical. No.
Just contemporary guitar. Because what I'm seeing when you just placed your hand over the show where the placement of your thumb, it was more like a classical position where the four fingers of your hand are 90 degrees from the strings, mm-hmm. which is more of that type of thing. So your thumb kind of angles down, but it's basically, that's like a classic, which gives you a lot of strength. I mean, they can pull up on the individual fingers, or the thumb can go down. It gives you a lot of power in that.
Yeah, it gives me a lot of momentum.
And then do me a favor real quick, and I'm going to try to describe this. Just go up on a scale. You don't have to go real fast, but just go up on the scale, and I'll try to describe the way she fingers on the fretboard. She's got her thumb, and this, again, I learned this in school, the classical players, her thumb is pretty much in the middle of the neck, and she's curling her fingers, which gives her more attack when she hammers down onto the string. So you're playing more like classical. That's a classical technique. And so her fingers are curled on the fretboard when she's doing the scale. And again, that tied in with the way she's playing that sound, it's really optimal for when you're playing, to get that clarity and also to play fast. So when she's doing those scales and moving up and down and stuff, it gives her that's part of the secret of the clarity. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know if, was that taught to you or is that just a natural?
It was like imprinted in my brain without it being said to me, kind mm-hmm. of. Like when I was 16, I studied bass at Musicians Institute. Mm-hmm. So I learned a crazy amount of stuff that was far more advanced than what mm-hmm. I had learned in School of Rock, because it's an actual university. So I like, even being at a young age, just watching all these guys that are so crazy, so advanced on their instrument, just watching them, like I said earlier, I learned so many things that didn't even need to be said, you know, just watching their hand placement, watching how they move, watching how they slap. And since I moved to LA, I've been doing a lot of things with Musicians Institute, and like I've been jamming a lot with the head of the bass department, Maurice over there, Maurice Verloop, and he is a crazy good bass player. He's amazing. And watching him and jamming with him, and we kind of like feed off of each other. It's awesome. I love it. It's great. Being in a room with other musicians that you can feed off of and learn a bunch of stuff, it's like, it's, there's nothing like it.
Well, we were talking earlier before the show, and I was mentioning, I was telling an old war story, and I think it's true. When you play with people that are, you know, you go in a room and you got these excellent players, it's scary and it's seat of your pants, but you end up, you end up playing better because you're moving. They're at a certain level and you're going to that level. It makes you play. Your musicianship gets better.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's definitely intimidating at first, but that's the best. It's the best. If you're not scared, if you don't feel inclined to get better, you're not going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's almost like a natural process, being around, watching, jamming with other musicians that are, that just have been doing it for way longer, have been in school, you know, just having them teach you and being kind of like a sponge. It's just having an open mind. I think that might be my motto. Just having an open mind.
Well, you just absorb all that. You're just taking in everything that you're picking up, and that's what it's all about. I mean, that really is.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Musicians Institute. What was a big thing that you learned there? Obviously you're playing with amazing players and all of that, but I mean, from what your experiences are before that, you had toured with the School of Rock and you had done a lot of stuff. What did Musicians Institute bring to the table for you musically?
I think it kind of just brought me up to the next level because I was classically trained in piano, so I knew that kind of aspect in music, but when it came to bass, because I studied bass there, it was just kind of like a whole new realm. Like, it was kind of like School of Rock was, it was high school, and Musicians Institute is the university. It was sort of like that. It was just the next level, higher education. I mean, more strict. Teachers that have been in not only the, you know, like the performance side of things, mm-hmm. but more of the business side of things as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned a lot at Musicians Institute about everything music related.
So did you take like arranging and theory and stuff like that?
I did do some theory over there, yeah.
Well, that's good. No, I mean, it's a mind changer. I mean, it was a major change for me to classical theory. I remember when one of the first classes they asked me to write something in, you know, 17th century or something, and I just put major seventh chords and all this stuff, and the guy just like X'd it in red, like, you can't do that. I mean, why not? It sounds great. And it's like, no. You know, but that's another story. But do me a favor and do a scale. I'm going to take a picture. I want to show this so I can put this up on the site. How you finger in the hands, the curve of your, and then I'll take a picture of the of your plucking so that they see the angle of that.
Sure.
So I'm going to have you turn a little bit this way for a minute. Okay, and then I'll get this. So just play a scale up and down. That's all right. Turn a little bit towards me because I want to show the angle of you. You don't have to just put your hands on the, you know, there you go, so that they see the angle. That's perfect. So you can, I'll put these up on the site, but it can see that 90-degree angle that I'm talking about. And it's very much, It's pretty much the same as classical guitar, the way you should play classical guitar. So I thought that was kind of fascinating. So the other thing I noticed too is that from Musicians Institute, at least from the newer videos that you're doing a lot of collaboration with other mm-hmm. players.
Yeah.
And like, for example, Amel Dariel and Cooper Drummer.
Yeah.
And that must be interesting getting, you're dealing with people with totally other different backgrounds. Two cellists cranked to the max. That has to be a
classically trained cellist. So, I mean, it's kind of similar, but kind of not. We started classical, but always had a rock vibe to
mm-hmm,
us.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of, steered away from the classical, but still being classically trained. But mm-hmm. now we use that kind of to our advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all of us, even Casey. Casey is also really a well-rounded musician, but all of us just love metal and hard rock. So being able to jam together in a room where all of us are just extremely passionate about the same thing, it's the best. Especially since I used to be in a metal band a couple years back, and since I started the YouTube thing, I became a lot more independent. So I was kind of doing everything by myself, which I like doing that too, but I also really missed being in a band. So collaborating with other artists is great.
Well, when you're playing with a bunch of people and it all clicks, there's nothing better.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the truth. That's the truth. Now, speaking about playing live and playing in the metal band, what did you use then? What did you use for amps and guitars for the band playing live? Because this is a kind of a studio sound and studio setup. What did you use live when you were playing louder?
Yeah, we traveled a lot. So a lot of the time, actually, they had rigs at the venues, which most of the time would be Ampegs because, they're really good amps, basically. So
they're heavy as hell, but they're great.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why they would always be there, because nobody would have to move them. But when I was bringing along my own gear, I had an acoustic 200-watt bass amp, which it got the job done. But now, using all my Roland amps,
Well, now, if you were playing in a large venue, what would you use?
Yeah. It really depends, because I would probably have to travel a decent amount to play a large venue. So I at NAMM in January, I played out of an Ampeg bass cab, and it sounded so good.
Was it the 8x10?
Yeah.
Yeah, 8x10s.
And
do you like playing live? Do you like tube over solid state, or does it matter?
It doesn't really matter to me. I really like tubes, but solid state I also appreciate. But yeah, I mean, I can't really carry anything super heavy. Because I'm not very strong at all. But if there's a rig there, the bigger the better, I think.
So basically, a lot of people, we've been seeing that with a lot of the players now. Because of the expense in flying and stuff, they just bring a simple pedal board or a guitar, and then they get there and they have Marshalls or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if you had your pick, if you're going to a venue and they say, "What amp do you want?" you would probably go like an Ampeg, or would you go for a tube one or a solid state, or it doesn't matter?
I would, if I could pick, I would say tube. I also really like Aguilar bass amps, actually. They have those all over the place at Musicians Institute, and mm-hmm. they sound amazing. They sound so good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I usually travel with my Roland because it's great. They make great amps, but they're also light. Same with my basses, actually. My basses are pretty light. I used to carry around basses that would hurt my back, at the end of the night.
What kind of wood is this bass? Do you know?
This is mahogany.
Oh, that is mahogany.
Yeah.
Okay, because it's hard to tell by the finish. Now, your bass amp, too, also has a direct out, so you could run it.
Yeah.
You could use that like a little monitor on stage and run it into a bigger rig.
Yeah, so and I use my 60X right here and my 10GX to record all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I record more than anything. I record more than playing live, and whatnot.
Well, I don't know. You're playing with so many people now, and those videos, that seems like it's going to be the next thing,
yeah.
I think. And but that's cool because basically you have all your sound in the Roland and with your guitar, and then you can just send it to anything. So that does work, and it's it's a small enough package. Now, do you use any effects? Have you ever used any effects on it? Anything?
Yep. Yeah. I use bass pedals.
Mm-hmm.
So my favorites that they have are the bass equalizer, which it's not so much of an effect, but it just makes everything the way you want it to sound. So it just goes above and beyond what your bass does, what your amp does. It's just an extra step. So, you know, bass, mid, treble, whatever you want, you adjust it however you want. So I use that all the time. And then I also have my bass overdrive and the BB1X, which I love. It's the BB1X is a bass driver. So it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be distorted, but it gives more of a push to your bass, which I love because I just love having punchy, pushy bass tone.
So you leave it on if you're in a song, or do you use it like when you have to solo?
Both.
Okay.
Both. You just, when the solo comes, you crank it up.
So the bass overdrive, because I've seen this when we have Billy Sheehan on and a couple other bass players, they'll use a little bit of distortion, just a little bit, to give it a little more grit to it, a little bite to it. So you do use a little bit.
I do. I always use the driver part because I love the punch, but the distortion part too, when I'm playing some Muse, that it's perfect.
Well, let's play. I want to play. This is one of my favorite pieces that you do. It's from Rush XYZ. I'm going to play a clip from the... She gave me a small clip of it. There's a little piece that's kind of self-contained. And then at the end of the show, I'm going to play the end where she really does some soloing. But I'm going to play the small clip first and take a listen to this, and we'll talk about how you did this. You can hear that growl that I was talking about where you're really punching the string. Now, were you using any of the distortion, or is that just direct?
No, I wasn't. That was completely direct.
And that's into the Roland, the 10?
Yep.
So you're just breaking up a little bit of the 10. You're just punching it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this bass does have a lot of gain. But see, that's that sound. You're doing that with fingers.
Yeah.
You're not using any pick or anything, and you're getting that kind of growl out of that.
It was, and I had... like maybe like 15 minutes before I put brand new strings on it. Brand new DR
strings. Speaking of strings, what do you use?
I use DR strings. I use the Pure Blues a lot, and also the Neon strings. If I'm playing a live show, those are really good.
The Neon visual. Is the Pure Blues are the stainless steel.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the other strings, with the wrap, does that dull the sound, or is they still pretty bright?
No, they're really bright. That seems to be like a common misconception, that the color kind of dulls the strings, but it really doesn't. I mean, the only thing is when you're playing a lot like me, and especially when you're using a pick, the color will chip off. But, I mean, really, that's the only thing. They're just like any other regular strings. They're as bright as you want them to
sound. How often do you have to change them? Do they stay bright pretty long?
Yeah, but they do. I change mine pretty often, though, because I like having new strings right before I record, which is, you know, pretty often. So it really depends, but I would say the max that it goes would be 3 months without changing my strings.
Oh, okay.
It really depends on how it's sounding and what I'm recording. If I'm slapping, I will always change the strings right before. Always.
So you always change, and before you, yeah.
Yeah, I would say every 2 to 3 months.
No, we used to. The Rickenbacker. I used the Rotos to get the Chris Squire sound, and it was funny because they would die so fast. So we used to boil them. That was one of the tricks.
Oh, really? I haven't. Okay, so I've heard that sometimes, but I never knew if it actually works.
It does, but they will die faster after that, so yeah. It doesn't last as long. But you boil it, it'll last for a session. So if you're doing a session or something, they'll brighten up. But you'll see like the film, all the oils will come out of the string when you boil them. But yeah, that was a little trick that. A studio trick. So I forgot who told me to do that, but I tried it on a guitar. It didn't work, but the bass it does it, because those strings are a little more robust.
So do you like really bright sounding strings? Because I know a lot of bass players, like when they just put on their strings, they're too bright. And what they do is, you know, like eat a bunch of chips and pizza and stuff and just have like all the grease.
Well, there was a story about... I heard this about a studio story about Stephen Stills. When he would play bass, he would never change the strings. He left them the deader the better. And that sound, he liked that sound, whether he used a pick or not. I like brighter strings because I like the overtones. And then I can always dull it later. So as from recording, I rather have more frequency response. It's easier to attenuate than it is to try to boost.
Yeah, that's true.
So that would be the thing. But a guitar, like I have a G&L bass, a 1000. It's a single pickup, and that thing has a lot of gain. It's so loud, it's passive. It runs line in. I mean, it literally it'll drive a console. I used to run it without any preamp, and I tried Rotos, I tried Labellas, and all sorts of different strings because I was trying to get at that time Abe Laboriel sound. I saw him in a session. He used Labellas. I forgot which bass he used, but it's just sounded killer. But it was just like this deep, full, round sound. Mm-hmm. And I tried the Rotos, and they actually worked. They were really bright, but the pickup on that guitar was so, you know, monstrous and had a lot of gain. It was plenty deep. But I found that, you know, I could use something as bright as a Roto, but I liked the Labellas. They felt a little better. It had more of a jazzier sound. And that time I was doing a gig where I was playing like a... big band type of bass playing, so it was interesting. But yeah, if you ever have an emergency and you don't have strings, it takes about 10 or 15 minutes, let them boil and simmer for, you know, let it keep boiling and put them back on and you'll get through your session. It does work.
That's good to know.
I don't know where it's just those little road stories are great. So but anyway, the Rush sound, this thing, so you were using that bass, it was great, and that's a prog thing more than a metal thing. Were there any other influences besides Rush that you listened to? Well, let's go through your influences.
Yeah,
besides Flea.
Yeah, for bass specifically, besides Flea, Louis Johnson,
mm-hmm.
Huge influence of mine. I always loved how percussive he is with the bass. I started listening to him when I was first getting into slapping and popping. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he is amazing. Also, Billy Sheehan, crazy dude. Same with Stu Hamm. Mm-hmm. Those two are just very... it's like almost like their bass is like a part of their body. It's crazy. So I always really appreciated that. I always looked up to that. I always wanted to have that sort of connection with my instrument. Whichever instrument that may be, bass, piano, guitar.
It's interesting because when we had Billy Sheehan on, his style of playing, when he would do a lot of different things, mm-hmm. evolved for him trying to act like a guitar player. He was basically covering as another guitar player besides being a bass player. So a lot of the chordal things and things he did was basically just to fill it out. It was really interesting, and it developed this amazing style.
Totally. I really appreciate musicians that go above and beyond what they just the amount of creativity. Like Les Claypool. Love mm-hmm. Les Claypool. His bass, it's like not even a bass anymore. It's like a...
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, and you know, just musicians that just really have that sort of creativity in their mind where they're not limited to, oh, this is how you play a bass, and that's the end of the story. They're like, well, I can teach myself how to play bass and go above and beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to fit the mold.
Yeah. No, that's true. Now, do you ever use fretless?
No, I don't, but I plan to soon, actually, because the Carbon Factory has so many basses over there. Usually I go there and switch it up sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because most of the stuff that you've done has been covers, but it's obvious that the next step is going to be doing more original stuff, and I'm just curious to see if you'll do stuff where you layer the basses. Not too many people do that. I've heard some things where they do different things, but you might be doing a funk groove on this five string here, and then maybe doing a melody on the fretless or something.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I have doubled basses a couple of times. I did a bass arrangement of Shape of My Heart by Sting, and that was all bass plus drums. Mm-hmm. So, just like I said earlier, just trying to be creative, even if it is a cover, just kind of trying to put my own kind of style on it. That's why even all those, all the bass players that I listen to and do covers of, like Geddy Lee and Flea, I don't try to match their tone exactly, just so it sounds a little bit different, just so you can tell that it's me playing their songs.
Yeah, well, I think that you've been playing enough, and you've been playing for so long, you definitely have your own sound. Your hands, it's in your hands. It's you. I mean, that's it. But that's cool. That being said, you can growl, you can pop, you can snap. You got it all. So, I mean, but it's still you. I agree. I think that's important. Now, the besides those effects, have you ever done things like chorusing?
I have, yeah. Actually, at Bass Player Live, I started going to that last year, and I'll probably be there this year too, but I was at the Roland and Boss booth, and we had a whole bunch of pedals out there, not just for me to play and demonstrate, but for everybody to come try, and, you know, we had a bass there and a guitar, like, you could just come try and do whatever you want, and so, yeah, I've experimented a lot with, you know, octave pedals, chorus pedals, just everything.
Yeah, really. A lot of people used to use the DBX subharmonic thing live. It works really nice, but you need a good 18-inch mm-hmm. speaker and a couple of, like, a friend of mine used to use it with a Coliseum, 320 watts, but a good SVT with an 18 will give you that. But one of the other ones, I don't know if you've ever tried this. I recommend this in your recording. If you can get your hands on one, play your bass through the Leslie.
Oh, yeah?
I've done a couple of sessions where we played that. There actually have been some bass, but it's nothing original. I'm not the first, but it has an interesting sound. It gets, especially the old tube Leslie, it'll growl more because it breaks up real easy. It's low. Mm-hmm. But when you besides the fast rotor, the slow rotor, it has a nice organic feel to it. Just throw that out there to be able to try that. But let's talk a little bit real quick. We're almost out of time. I want to talk real quick about your recording technique. How do you set up your session to do the videos and the recordings? How do you kind of go break it down a little bit?
Well, basically what I do is I set up, because I usually like just miking up my amp. Mm-hmm. So I'll have my amp with me and usually a couple pedals, like my BB1X and mm-hmm. a bass driver. But so I'll have my amp, and on top of that, I have fret wraps from Groove Gear, and they really come in handy when you're recording because it just decreases, even if there is a tiny bit of fret buzz, it'll decrease it, and it'll make everything sound cleaner a little bit. So I really love taking this into the studio with me. So I'll have my fret wraps, my Roland gear, my Boss gear, usually my Carvin guitar, 5 and 4 strings, and my DR strings. And so I'll just bring all of that with me and mic it up and play.
Okay. So what do you set up first? Do you have like a rhythm track first and then do the bass? And then like you did stuff where you did piano and guitar.
Yeah.
You do the piano first and then do the bass? Or, you know, that one where you played the guitar, there's two guitars, there's electric guitar, acoustic guitar.
Yeah, usually what I do if I'm playing multiple instruments is I'll do the piano first, because that's usually the foundation of the song. And then after that, I'll do bass, and then I'll do acoustic and electric, just kind of like trying to build it up.
Now, speaking real quick, what guitars do you have?
I have a lot. I have a ton.
Okay, electric guitar. Let's go down the line here.
Oh, man, I don't even know where to start. I have I have a Tele. That was the first electric guitar that I ever got. And then after that, I was, like, a huge metalhead. So I got an X Shape. And, I mean, it wasn't, like, super convenient unless I was playing live, which mm-hmm. I was a lot at the time. And then, you know, I started getting into more, like, kind of standard shapes. So I got a Les Paul Shape and...
But they weren't... It wasn't a Gibson.
No. It was an LTD.
LTD. Yeah. That's the one I've seen on the video.
Yeah.
And then that's... those are pretty high gain pickups?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those are active pickups. And then...
No Strat?
No, my brother had a Strat.
Okay.
So
there was one in the family.
And he had a Strat. So, yeah, we would definitely switch it up a lot. And then, and then last year I met the dudes over at Carbon Guitars. And
yeah, they got some pretty interesting instruments.
They have great instruments. So I've been using their instruments ever since.
Well, Craig Chiquizo came in and he brought in this Strat style guitar.
Yeah.
And it was killer.
It's crazy. I mean, you can customize pretty much whatever you want. If mm-hmm. you want a Strat shape, a Tele shape, I don't even know what shape. You can do whatever.
No, I'm just
you
saying
want.
It had that. It got that really, the tonal quality that you would get from like a vintage Strat. He's total Carvin everything.
I know.
And he has that signature model. His acoustic guitar is killer. Acoustic guitars, what do you use?
Taylor. I have my Taylor nylon string. That's what I use for acoustic.
I thought I saw a steel string in the mm-hmm. video.
Maybe an old video, but recently I've been playing nylon.
Just nylon, no steel string?
Not recently, no.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a pretty good collection.
I know. I like it. And we didn't even talk about my pianos.
What do you have, pianos? Quick.
Okay, so I have my Roland piano. It's a grand piano. So mm-hmm. that's what I learned.
That's one in the video.
Yeah, that's what I learned how to play on. And then recently they gave me an FA08 workstation. So it feels like, it is a keyboard, but it feels like a piano. Like
is it the 88
piano.
Key with the weighted
yeah.
keys?
Yep.
Okay, so if you
88 keys, total piano sounding, piano looking, complete piano vibe, just a keyboard. So you can actually take it places.
That's cool. I have a Phantom 8. It's an older one.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't take it everywhere. It's too heavy.
but
it plays
great.
It's cool. It's 88 keys. It's great. It's got a lot of sounds in it, too.
Yeah, I love taking my keyboard places.
Oh, that's good. It's got to be portable. They're just, some of those guys are heavy. They're like 120 pounds, some of them. But that's pretty good. That's
like
a pretty good rig.
Like
and then you just record. What do you use software-wise to record to?
Logic.
Logic. So
and Pro Tools sometimes, but mostly Logic.
Mostly Logic. Oh, that's good. Well, we're almost out of time. I want to mention really quick, AnnaSantinaMusic.com. And quickly, what are you doing now? You're doing some, there's some new things that are happening with you.
I have a project right now in the works with Kevin Martin from Candlebox, and mm-hmm. Matt Hutchinson is the producer on it, and it'll be, I'm really excited about it, like super, super stoked. Original songs, and it'll be great. Those two guys are great to work with, and also, I will be singing on that. So
cool.
I know it'll be different for sure. But
yeah, we were talking about it because I saw this video where she's playing piano and guitar. She does all this stuff. It's like, cool. Where's the vocals? But it was good. It was good. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah. So yeah, and then also I have the project with Emil and Daryl and Cooper drummer Casey Cooper. We are pretty much a YouTube band. So you know,
you think that group and do you think that group will ever play live?
Yeah, I mean they have been doing stuff over down south. In Florida.
Oh, they're not here. They're back
yeah,
east.
Yeah, they're in Florida. But actually, we have a gig together coming up in September. So I'll be out there again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that'll be YouTube, so we'll get to see that.
Yep.
No, that's great. So, well, when you get the when this thing with Kevin Martin is done, that'll just be another excuse for you to come back, because we're out of time, and I didn't even get to talk about the social networking. I mean, there's just so much more to talk about. But I just want to thank you. I think what you're doing is amazing, and just keep expanding the horizons. I think it's really important that you're going in all these different directions and you're absorbing all these styles, because that's, at least for me when I was younger and stuff, that was the big thing, is just to take all of it and make it into something else. And you definitely have your own sound. It's, you have a distinctive tone, and it's great.
Well, thank you so much.
I think it's really amazing. I want to thank Derek for putting us together.
Yeah.
He was the one that was able to get us all together and get
Derek
this done.
Murdoch.
And definitely we're going to have you back, and you're always welcome to come and hang out with us. And so hopefully we'll have you here even as a guest just to come in and ask questions and stuff.
Definitely.
Everybody, have a great week. What I'm going to close is the outro. This is a more extended part of the XYZ with Anna playing bass, and it gets in a more involved solo. But you can hear, again, the tone. She's getting that grit. As she said, she was playing it straight through the amp, so she's pushing the amp a little bit. Great sound, and it's just, being a big prog fan, she just nailed it. So thank you again so much for being on the show. Everybody, have a great week. And we will see you next week. Here we go.